And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, a very special crossover episode, like when the critic would appear in the Simpsons universe or something like that.
Exactly.
I am joined by, I'm going to go one by one. I am joined by first the creator of one of the only shows that my wife and I can watch together, The Good Place, and also the worked on The Office, created Parks and Rec, co-created Brooklyn Nine-Nine, yada, yada, yada. Mike Schur, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here.
You are a Celtics fan, and I was very relieved to hear that because I do worry sometimes that there's not enough Boston fan representation in the media. This is very healthy for us.
We've been marginalized, and it's about time that someone who represents Boston fandom got a chance to speak into an ESPN microphone.
Jen Statsky is a Clippers fan. She writes for The Good Place, has written for Parks and Rec, has written for Broad City, which is on my list. I got to watch that show because the few episodes I've seen with my wife are like downright hysterical. I have to watch
it. Give it a shot. Hi, very happy to be here too.
You're a Clippers fan, and Joe Man. Andy, making at least your third appearance,
I think so,
on the Low Post podcast. Stand-up comedian, Parks and Rec, Good Place, has appeared as a guest star. I'm going to say star, guest star on Modern Family. Not even a guest, a recurring role on Modern Family.
That is true. Yes.
As Julie Bowen's assistant. Shout out Julie Bowen, anytime, open invite, anytime you want to come on. She's a legit huge Knicks fan, anytime. And I believe you played a drug dealer on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I did, yeah.
Didn't seem like as much of a stretch as I thought it might be for you, that role.
Yeah, I can play a timid drug dealer. Yeah. That's in
Joe
my
is
wheelhouse.
Method for like a decade before that.
Timid is the key there, though.
Yes.
It's not a like hard drug dealer. It's a timid, nervous drug dealer.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is supposed to be an NBA Good Place crossover podcast. We'll see where it goes. But I just, first of all, how many episodes do we have left?
Well, let's see, 8 just aired, so there's 9, 10, 11, 12, and then the finale, so 5 left. The finale is like an hour plus, though, so it's almost like 2 episodes in one.
And are we on hiatus now, or is there one more before
there's one that? More on Thursday, the 9th episode of the season airs this Thursday, and then we're off for the holidays back in January.
So, just, first of all, congratulations, because the show is phenomenal. When it first appeared on the air, I watched it because, Mike, you have earned the just – I don't watch any shows first episode. I need people to tell me they're good.
Sure.
And then I watched it. But this – I'm in, and I watched it. I was like, this is funny. I'm not sure it's going to make it. It doesn't feel like a show that's going to make it. So were you nervous it wasn't going to make it? And when did you begin to realize we're going to get a run? We're going to get a legit run?
Well, the entire first season – I should still say spoiler alert.
No, there's no, for this season only,
Well, the entire first season hinged on a gigantic twist at the end of the year. And so I sort of was like, look, we're going to do this season. The entire thing is going to build up to this one gigantic twist. And if we can get to that point without the twist leaking out, and if we can spring that twist on people, I have a good feeling. I feel like we'll be able to last for as long as we want. And that was the sort of bet the show made, that we put the show on Ted Danson's shoulders and Kristen Bell's shoulders and banked very hard on the idea that America likes those two people. And I think that was a good bet. And then we got to the end and we did the twist, and it had the effect that we sort of thought it would have. And then after that, it felt like, okay, now we're in. So the whole first season, I was sort of nervous. Just that, like, people wouldn't buy in, or that it, like, people would have your attitude, which was like, I don't know, where is this going?
But, no, I was in. I was worried that people would have that attitude. I was in no matter what. I was worried that people were not, like, it was going to be too esoteric or too big, you know, philosophical or whatever.
Yeah.
But I would also say, though, the first season was very frustrating as it was happening, because I could tell people were treating it like it was just a cute network sitcom. But, you know, and it was so tempting to be like, actually, it's going to be really great. And at the end, it's going to be really messed up and flip everything. But you couldn't tell people that there was a huge surprise coming. So you just had to allow them to sort of gently tell you that that cute show you write for is pretty funny.
Yeah. So Joe and Jen, you guys knew when Mike knew, almost when Mike, the twist was coming.
Yeah, I believe, like, when we signed on to the show, both Joe and I, like, Mike had pitched us the full, because, you know, Mike had conceived of the full thing before it started, before he wrote the pilot. And so, yeah, we knew coming on that it was
the only
coming.
People who knew the twist were essentially the writers. Like, Ted and Kristen knew. None of the other actors knew. But I had to tell all the writers because it, like, you couldn't write that first season without everyone being on the same page, because then people would be pitching things that didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, all the writers knew. And we did a very good job. I'm very proud of us. We all really, like, kept it under wraps.
Was there even, like, were there even people thinking there was a twist? Like, where, you know, because you've talked about on many podcasts I've listened to about Reddit and Reddit deep dives. But did that even exist? Did anyone see any possibility of a twist?
Not really, because no one, I think we sort of hid in plain sight, because nobody expects, if you make, you know, Lost or The Watchmen or whatever, any other of Damon's little off shows. If you're doing a half hour mystery box, J.J. Abrams type drama, I think savvy audiences these days are like, all right, where's this going? What's the big twist going to be? We were making a half hour network comedy that was very brightly colored and featured Ted Danson and Kristen Bell. And so I think we sort of hid in plain sight. I don't think anyone expected, no one knew to look for one, right? So we got all the way to the end because nobody thought it was a possibility. It just wasn't the genre we were working in. After that first season, in future seasons, then everyone started going, what's the twist? What's the twist? And that was its own problem. But I think no one expected it, and so we didn't have to actually work that hard to hide it.
How many NBA jokes have made it onto the show? There's at least one Jailblazers joke. Did anyone in this room write the Jailblazers joke?
Actually, no. I don't think I did. No.
How have you not worked Wiggins into the show?
I mean, I will say I knew all of this while we were writing this current season. I could see on Instagram that Karl Towns and Andrew Wiggins were both training in LA. So I was constantly pitching, like, well, Towns could be a demon. Like, we could bring Pat in. And, you know, he's been in a Katy Perry video. He has some chops. Like, let's bring
him. There was no time to write in, like, because you had to adjust the Blake Bortles storyline to account for real life. There was no time to adjust for, like, Andrew Wiggins might be good
jokes. I think there was no patience to placate me in any way.
I will say we did, as season three, beginning season three, we did it in Australia, the first, like, six or so episodes. Joe probably tried to get a Luke Longley joke in maybe 450 times.
Yeah.
And that led to, like, those of us who knew Luke were like, no. And then the other half of the writers aren't basketball fans, so they were like, what? Who are you talking about?
It was a good joke. Eleanor's living in a long stay hotel, so it was I wanted to be called a Luke Long Stay hotel.
Fine. I'm in. You have talked
but
to me.
That's the standard joke reaction. Fine.
Well, me it is.
You've talked to me before on this podcast. You call them 10%ers, where you know it's
the 1%. Right? That one's a 0.1%.
That's a 0.1%.
Yeah. But that 0.1% is going to be super, super thrilled about that joke.
In the episode that airs on Thursday, there is probably the tiniest possible NBA joke, which is there's a character you see for like one scene whose last name is Raja. And it's we needed the name of an Eastern European gentleman, and you actually see his nameplate on his desk, and his last name is Raja. That wasn't even Joe or Jen. That was Dan Schofield, who wrote the script. Who was like, I'm going to name this guy after Dino Raja, a basketball player no one remembers and hasn't played in the league in 20 years.
You know who remembers him? This guy right here.
Of course you do.
Of course you do.
Because
I would hope so.
Well, also, I go to Croatia every summer. He's a legend in Croatia. I've gotten to know all the Croatian basketball players. So I WhatsApped him. I was like, hey, I'm going to be in Split on these dates. Would love to grab a beer. And let me tell you something. Grabbing a beer with Dino Raja is grabbing a beer with the entire city of Split, Croatia. We sat at an outdoor table and like, not only just fan, like people just kept showing up, and you'd be like, "Oh, this is my friend. He's a famous guitarist. This is my friend. He's a writer." Then like people his son showed up and was basically like, "Can I just have €100?" And Dino just whipped out €100. And, like the son just went away with his friend. It was
amazing.
Yeah. Drinking with Dino Raja was like exactly what you think it is.
You're describing Jen and Joe's dream right now.
Yeah.
That they would be able to just WhatsApp Dino Raja or anyone like Dino Raja.
Well, Josh Okogie for you. So Jen gave you some on an email about constantly bringing up Josh Okogie in the writers. Is that true?
A lot of draft videos of Josh Okogie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like when I'm, when I, wait, the way the writer's room's constructed, one person has control of the keyboard and thus the internet browser. So there were long periods of time where I would hijack the room and I just make everyone watch like Draft Express of like Lori Markkinen or Josh Okogie, like trying to place like, you know, and we're in a room full of like very patient adults, many of whom have children and have like actual real life problems. And I'm like the most stressed out person in the entire room. I'm trying to figure out like who are we going to pick? Yeah, it's not fun.
How excited are you about the Andrew Wiggins revitalization? Do you believe it?
I believe it. I mean, these two know. I've been saying this for, probably the last 4 years. The whole time we've been a show is just me complaining that he has so much potential. He just doesn't seem to care about basketball. And this year he seems to care about.
And a max deal.
And a max deal. Yeah.
He like knows how to pass now. Yeah. He's like, he's worked on that part of his game, right? I was looking at like, he has way more assists than he's ever had before, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Great.
I texted Joe the other day in one of his games, and I think it was like a week ago, yeah. and was like, Joe, is Andrew Wiggins good? and he wrote back and was like, I feel like I'm losing my mind. He's doing the thing that I've wanted him to do for 4 years, and he's finally doing it. And like, it was like texting with someone who found out that like they had a brother who had been terminally ill, and suddenly the doctors had just called and said like he's going to be okay. Like Joe, I could tell Joe was crying somehow through the text.
I'm very happy for him.
What's the like? I haven't watched a ton of Wolves game. What is the read on like? Why is he different? What happened?
Do you want to take that one, or do you want me to take that one?
Well, it just seems like they spent the entire offseason they literally painted. Point values on the court where they train, just so like, see the shots you've been taking are terrible shots. So if you just take one step back, that's a good shot, and right. that's maybe he's a
or
visual
one step
learner.
Forward,
right?
That's called coaching.
Yeah. Coaching. Okay. Yeah. Coaching
like,
happened.
Like but it is true. It's like you can go to these players and just be like, the ultimate thing you control as a coach is playing time, and like you can go to any player and be like, okay, those dog shots that you're taking, stop. Taking them, take these ones instead. And like, players are incredibly adaptable once you actually go to them and be like, look, I like you. Ryan Saunders and Wiggins have a real bond. I want you to succeed, but like, these are the things that have to happen for you to succeed. Like, players, oh, okay, I'll try. People, hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's COO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply for your job proactively so you get quality candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of every 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within one day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes? Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, LOWEPOST, the name of this podcast. ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Jen, what's your Clippers fan origin story? Because you are not from Los Angeles.
No, I'm actually from Boston.
Yeah.
And I said, I think the Boston sports world does not need one more fan.
Hard disagree.
Have you been nominated? Did anyone nominate you for some sort of Nobel Prize for making that kind of decision?
Let's get that going today. Let's get a hashtag going. So I moved to LA in 2013, and I had grown up, and I was like, I was a big basketball fan, but like, and I was a Celtics fan growing up, but when I moved here, I just like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't get into the Celtics. And I was like, and then I knew I wasn't going to be a Lakers fan for obvious. I'm not going to move to LA and get really into the Lakers. That seems insane. And so I was just like, all right, I'm a Clippers fan. It was Lob City and like, it was fun. And that's that.
What's the best Lob City game you were at?
I was at the Spurs game 7.
I was too.
Have
we talked about this?
I don't know.
I was at that game. That's one of the best basketball games I've ever seen live.
It's incredible. That was for sure the best basketball game I've ever been to. That CP shot, forever. I know people have different opinions on him. Like, I love him forever for that.
Yeah.
He was injured too.
One leg.
When he made that shot.
One leg. And it is crazy.
It is interesting how we've all sort of collectively decided as an NBA commentariat that the first round doesn't matter. Like, CP, that he just won't get credit for that shot. When people talk about, has he come up big in the playoffs? Like, he literally won a playoff series.
Yes.
Almost exactly.
By the way,
buzzer.
Against a team that in any reasonable year is like a 2 seed, a 1 seed, and maybe goes all the way.
Defending
like,
champions.
Yeah. Like they, that team was so good. And like the fact that they won that series, that's the best game in the history of the Clippers franchise, right?
I think like, so. And it like, right. And then the next round, the way it went down with Houston, it's like no one will ever really talk about that shot anymore because of we just imploded the next
Well, Harden is going through some of that now where he gets dogged all the time for his playoff resume and somewhat deservedly so. And he has had one all-time epic meltdown in an elimination game against San Antonio when they did not have Kawhi or Tony Parker, who was still kind of important then. But he's had great first round series. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, when you're a great player, the first round is just like, it doesn't
matter. You're supposed to win the first
Whereas
round.
Whereas in baseball, Mike, the sports you've written a lot about, like, it's so, every series is so fraught and every upset possible is on the table. Like, the first, like, I still remember from my Mets fandom days, like, Todd Pratt's series clinching home run is a flashbulb moment in my life. That really mattered.
Yeah. Well, basketball, because scoring is so common in basketball and uncommon in baseball, like those moments don't stand out unless they're literally game winners. And even then it's like, whatever. It was 118 to 117 or whatever. In baseball, those games have so much more scrutiny and pressure. It is actually true now though with playoff expansion in every sport. If you're a football player and you win a wild card game as a quarterback with like nobody remembers that. It's truer in basketball, but it's true in every sport that like those guys don't get credit unless it's the semis or the finals. Like that's the only place you make your case at this point.
Now, Jen, you're a season ticket holder, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Will you be at any of the games this week? Because I think we should get the first Kawhi PG minutes.
I think we will.
Are you going on Wednesday? I'm going.
I'm going on Wednesday. Yeah.
Both going.
Yeah.
You're a regular at these games now.
Well, not a regular, but my son, I have an 11-year-old son who's an obsessive and has become a Celtics fan. Kyrie made him a Celtics fan and then now he hates Kyrie and it's on Kemba, which is great because the team's a lot more fun to watch.
Is your son Bill Simmons?
My son and Bill Simmons' son play on the same baseball team.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. I probably go to 8 to 12 games a year, something like that, although this is only the second time I've been so far.
Yeah.
How many have you been to? You have season
I go
tickets.
To a lot. I'm a 33-year-old childless woman who often goes alone to Clippers games. That's so Mike has a kid, and I have that. But, yeah, we have half-season tickets, and then if there's, like, a game I really want to see, I'll go on, like, StubHub or something and see if there's...
How do you feel about the new-look Clippers?
I feel good about it. Yeah. It's like, it's a little bit hard to, like, everyone I think is so anxious to see how PG and Kawhi will look together. And so I'm anxious for that to happen.
37 points in 20 minutes.
I know. It was very,
I mean,
very
you were
exciting.
Saying, Jen was saying to me the other day that she's worried that they don't have enough scoring. And I was like, Paul George is coming back. Yeah. It's going to be fine. And then he scored 37 points in 20
minutes.
Answered
that question pretty
well. It was interesting how quickly Kawhi tailed off might be a little strong, but like after the start where he was like dishing 8 assists a game, he started to look like I think he needs this, whatever rest is happening.
He can't do it all himself.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It was like peaking those first few games and then it kind of looked like he was like a little bit slower, not getting as many assists. So I feel good about it. I'd like to see, I'm a little like, Doc's playing Lou and Trez some heavy minutes. I'd like to see Zoo get some more time, but I trust Doc. He knows better than I do. Maybe. Probably.
Where were you when the Kawhi PG thing happened?
I was sitting on my couch at home because it was like, what, like 11
late. I remember
PM.
11,
it was late.
11 out here.
And I had,
I
you
think
know,
I texted you.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
We all
I
did.
Had, well, everyone in the world texted me. But
there's
I,
a
know,
good place writing staff is texting like me about like, oh my God, holy
yes.
That's amazing.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, with this stuff. Yes, like anything that happens. I went to the Super Bowl in Minnesota, whenever that was, a couple of years ago, the Patriots, Eagles, and I was with my son, and we went to the Timberwolves game the night before, and I sent Joe Mandy, way more pictures of my child than I did to my wife. Like, I think I sent Joe Manny 11. Because he was like, I have a deal with my son. I made a terrible deal with my son. I made a max deal with him when he was like 7 and first getting into sports, which was anytime we go to a new stadium, he gets a jersey of a player from that stadium. I thought it'd be a nice memento. These things cost like $120. Yeah, they're so expensive.
T-shirt is what you
get. Yeah, I blew it. That's why I'm saying it was a max deal and I shouldn't have made it. But I got him a Towns jersey. And he wanted a Wiggins jersey, and I was like, no, Joe won't be able to forgive me. So I got him a Towns jersey. So I just was sending Joe, like, picture after picture of my then, like, 9-year-old son in a Towns jersey all over the stadium. By the way, they won. Towns had, like, 32 that night. Yeah. He had a great game.
I was like, yeah, your son, this is great. But I was like, is it true Sting and Shaggy are sitting courtside?
Yeah. I remember that game. That was a big moment for Minneapolis.
Floyd Merriweather was also there.
And Ray Schremer, which is still the gif I use. Anytime the Wolves win on Instagram, I post this gif of Ray Schremer, a rap duo. They on the Jumbotron, I guess they went to them, but like the guy running the Jumbotron didn't know who they were. So it said Wolves win, and then underneath the Chiron just said hip hop duo. Like hip hop guys. I don't know who, yeah.
Oh, Guy Fieri was also at that game.
Very, very well pronounced.
Yes, thank you.
Gorgeous.
Anyway, the point is when anything related to the Timberwolves or Clippers happens, by the way, even the Good Place writers who don't care about basketball are texting Jen and Joe about this.
That's like, good. Whatever. Those are good friends. It's time for some straight talk, people. Look, you wouldn't spend more to get the exact same thing, would you? You would not. So when I tell you that Straight Talk Wireless runs on the same networks as the big guys but charges you a lot less, you got to take that deal and run. And the deal just got even better. Straight Talk Wireless now offers 25 gigs of high-speed data on our $45 unlimited plan. That's right. Get America's best networks and 25 gigs of data for only $45 a month. Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. First 25 gigs at high speed, then 2G. See terms at straighttalk.com. I'm going to steer the conversation away from the NBA for a minute. Whoever can go first. Favorite all-time joke on The Good Place. Just the joke that you, favorite bit, favorite whatever, just something that, even if it's not mine are probably going to be obvious, but even if just something you have a sweet spot for, like, I'm really glad we got that on.
Well, I mean, for me, I think it has to be the Bortles, just the amount of traction we've gotten out of Blake Bortles. Cause that was, speaking of texting, I was just berating Mike originally to keep the original Bortles joke in.
Yeah.
I think it was episode 4.
Yeah. It was an episode where, it's a flashback to Jason Mendoza's life in Jacksonville, and he, is sort of meditating on his life and what's gone wrong. And then at the end of it, he lights a Molotov cocktail and blows up a speedboat. And Joe had Manny Jacinto yell Bortles as he threw the Molotov cocktail in the air.
And similar to the way when guys play pickup basketball, Kobe.
Yeah. So he put that in and I took it out and Joe was like, come on, like it's hilarious. He's yelling Bortles. And I was like, Joe, no one knows who Blake Bortles is. Like, this is insane. And he's like, just put it. And I was like, you know what? You're right. It doesn't hurt anything, right? It doesn't. If you hear it and you don't know who Blake Bortles is, which is right. Everyone, you'll just think it's some weird
like
thing.
Nonsense, yeah.
And then we did it and it made us laugh so hard when it aired that we just like, all right, now every time he does anything, he's going to talk about Blake Bortles. Yeah. And now it's a 4-year long running joke that is now metastasized because now it's Nick Foles and now Nick Foles is broke his clavicle and now we brought Manny back in to do a piece of ADR because we had shot these episodes way over the summer and then Foles broke his clavicle. We had to bring him in to do ADR to talk about how Foles had broken his clavicle. And like that's the amount of money that's gone into just sustaining the Bortles fandom joke is staggering.
So Florida is very easy to poke fun at. But the fact that you narrowed it to Jacksonville is what works. Like, I've never even been to Jacksonville, and I still think it's funny. Who picked Jacksonville? You?
No, I think that was Joe.
It was me.
We were talking about Orlando, right?
Right.
Or Miami, maybe. Orlando for a while.
And right before we started writing, I had just done a run of Florida shows with John Mulaney. And the last show we did in Florida was in Jacksonville, and both John and I were like, this is the weirdest place we've ever been. It's like a ghost city. And, it was just like fresh on my mind. We had come back and I just wanted to.
It's also like Orlando immediately suggests Disney World. Yeah. Jacksonville immediately suggests nothing. Yeah. So like that part of what we liked about it was like, and then we looked it up and it's like the largest city in America by area. I think it's bigger than LA.
It's like, yeah. Or maybe the second. It's definitely the biggest in Florida.
Yeah. And it's also most of it is like under sea level. It's like below the ocean somehow. And it just seemed like, yeah, that's specificity. The old rule is like the more specific you are in comedy, the funnier things are. So it just seemed like untrod territory and very specific.
I'm glad you got it in because my wife knows who Blake Bortles is now. She knows.
Well, one of the really fun things about it is watching when Blake Bortles like was cut and he became a story for a day. There were all these people tweeting like, "Oh, I thought that was something they made up. I didn't think that was a real person."
We had writers in the room, like Megan Amram, one of our writers, is not a sports fan at all, and she admitted like 2 seasons in, she was like, "I didn't know who Bortles was. I just thought like she thought it was a. I don't know what she thought."
It was
Jason
like a,
was supposed
like
to
a
be
curse
saying.
Word or something.
Yeah,
that
that's
she was
how
yelling.
Like specific it is. But
she's the pun mistress, right?
She's the pun mistress. Yes,
because
for sure.
I remember someone tweeted a whole document of all the restaurant names.
I think that was her.
Someone.
Some of them are just so goddamn good.
Yeah.
That you're just like, I can't believe that. She's probably just right, like rapid fire.
Her brain is broken.
Yeah. Her brain is, she has synesthesia, which is that condition where you see, when people talk, you see colors come out of their mouths, or when you hear music, you see colors and it's not a coincidence that brain leads to like almost compulsive pun making. Yeah. Like she can't stop herself. And so.
I was watching a few clips yesterday and today just of scenes that I wanted to recall the specific dialogue, and one of them was Chidi going up in Australia and ordering a muffin and being paralyzed by indecision. And it's, you just don't even notice if your eye is not in the right place. The muffin stand is, "We crumb from the land down under." I was like, that is like, I wonder how many, what percentage of viewers even look at the sign. I mean, The Simpsons obviously made this a thing.
Yeah.
But it's, you must take such pleasure in nailing those.
We do. And it's also nice to feel like there's no, like, little nook or cranny of the show that hasn't been thought about. Like, I think that kind of richness of like the visual field is very additive. Like, I think it matters. Like, even if you don't pick up on it, I think that it gives you the sense that it's a lived in world. It's a real world. And like, I think that stuff is really important, especially in this day and age when everyone can pause their screen. Right. Like it is not allowable. If you're seeing a chalkboard or a sign or whatever, you are not allowed these days to just have it be gibberish. You have to fill it out with something. And then we have people like Megan who are like, "Great, let me at it. I'll write 1,000 dumb puns for this sign." I think it helps. I think it makes the show feel important and rich and stuff. By the way, my favorite Bortles joke isn't even a Bortles joke. It's the joke about Jacksonville, where Jason casually says, he's like, "You know, I love Jacksonville. It's easily one of the top 10 swamp cities in northeastern Florida."
has like the mayor of Jacksonville reached out to the show and been like, "Can you stop? Or I like it. Can we get involved somehow?"
Everyone that you guys can check my math on this, but everyone who's I've ever heard of from Jacksonville is happy about it. They're all like, "You guys nailed it. It's exactly, you're accurately describing Jacksonville." The other thing is the Jaguars love it. Like, the Jaguars social media team and like marketing team are so happy. They send us, I have a Blake Bortles signed football in my office. Mm-hmm. Like, they sent us jerseys. They said the day that Foles signed with the team, they sent a bunch of signed Nick Foles jerseys and just said like, "Thanks for talking about the Jaguars." 'Cause I don't think anyone else in the country ever does that.
They sent me and Manny to see a playoff game.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe and Manny Jacinto went to Jacksonville and watched the Jaguars defeat the Pittsburgh Steelers like 10-3.
No, the Bills.
Oh, the Bills.
The truly the most boring football game I've ever witnessed.
Did Bortles play? Was he still playing?
He was there, yeah.
Yeah.
We were on the field yelling Bortles to Bortles. It was wonderful.
Jen, favorite joke. What comes to mind?
Oh, man. It doesn't have to be one I wrote, right?
No, it could be anything you want.
This is going way back, but there's season one, episode, what's Eternal Shriek? Six?
Seven.
There's a monologue that Ted has about all the human things he wanted to do that he wasn't going to get to because he was going to be retired. And it's jokes like, I want you to do that thing when you're walking down the hall and the person goes the way you're going and you kind of shuffle and then you chuckle and like, I wanted to pull my hamstring and like, it's all these very.
I wanted to get a rewards card.
Yeah.
Any rewards card.
Yeah, exactly. It's all these very human things, and Ted is just like so good delivering that monologue, and it's such a like perfect essence of who that character is that like when someone asked, I think Alan Sepinwall asked me recently, like, if you had to tell someone like one clip of the show, like, what do you show them? And I'm like, that Ted's performance is like all time incredible, and that monologue, I love it very much.
Well, Danson doing human things is on my list of favorite things. So the other one, the more famous one probably than that, is when he's going back to Earth. Or no, they make him an honorary human. That's
yes,
what it is.
Yeah.
And they're like, here's your bag of human things.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's car keys. And he's like, oh, I'm so excited to lose my car keys. And then like he does a thing where he pats his
I can do that thing where I pat my pockets to see where they are. Yeah.
Oh, a Dr. Oz diet book because you're all such big suckers.
Yeah.
It's a stress ball that like, I can't wait to lose this and then find it. And
well,
like,
that with that, it's I can't wait to almost throw this away and then think, no, I'll use it.
So when you're writing that, when you get to the scene that's like, Danson's going to get a bag of human stuff. That just, I picture like 12 hours. That is an infinite playpen for you. Like, what's on the cutting room floor of that? Is it a cutting room building, basically? Like, it just must be much
must be
fun
just
stuff.
Like a full page of pitches.
The term we use that other people use too for that kind of thing is joke bag. Literally, in this case, it's almost a literal joke bag, but it's like you create a scenario. And then you spend a half an hour and everyone pitches jokes and you write them all into this enormous speech. And then as a group, you kind of go through and go, what are our favorites? We'll pick our five or six favorites. Sometimes we'll have another one that was like that was when Eleanor confesses in that she's not supposed to be in the good place in the first season. There's a scene where Michael is saying, oh, I'm going to give you this quick litmus test to try to figure out what kind of person you were, whether you were good or bad. It's sort of like a quiz. And it's all these questions that are like, have you ever taken off your shoes and socks on a commercial airline? And then one is, have you ever paid money to listen to music performed by California funk rock band, the Red Hot Chili Peppers? And so with those, like, we wrote, I don't know, 100 of those questions that, and it was easy in this case because Ted didn't even have to memorize it. He's literally reading them off things. So we were like, well, we can just go crazy here. So we probably had him ask 40 questions or something. And cause all Eleanor had to do was say no every time. That's probably the biggest, like, document we had was those questions. Right. But yeah, like random stuff that Michael's bag of human crap, contains. I'm sure we had a full
a
page of stuff.
List, yeah.
That has to be. That's from and like I under everyone's job is way more stressful than other people think, right? So like, but that seems to me so goddamn fun, but also maybe agonizing. Like when you is the, like there's one that you're kind of heartbroken doesn't make the it's just but it seems so goddamn fun.
You get used to it. I mean, Joe's a stand up; he can speak to this more than we can probably. But like the thing about comedy is you do what you think is the right joke, and sometimes it's. Just like, even if you love it, it's like, then you watch it at the end of the day and you're like, well, it's not as funny. You can't cling to jokes that don't work. So like, that's part of the fun of a scene like that is you get to do 50 and then you choose the five best. You very rarely cling to things that don't end up funny just because of how funny you initially thought they were.
Yeah.
Like it's a pretty meritocratic system, right? Like,
there's also something to the show being still like on a network is that we have to stay within 22 minutes. So like just inherently good jokes are going to get cut or, you know, there are going to be fragments of jokes that are left on the cutting room floor. And you just have to like deal with it because everything is in service of the show and the story and it makes the stronger jokes stronger. You know what
right.
I mean? Like we don't have the luxury of just putting in all the stuff we want.
Right. Like if a joke. When you have 21 minutes, the joke usually needs to be tied to story or character and moving that story forward. Like, it would be great to spend 10 minutes on some flight of fancy, but you can't do it when it's like a network show. And so that, you get trained out of be clinging to certain jokes pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's a good result when you're cutting jokes you like, because that means that you right. have a full show of jokes you like, and you're now trimming the excess fat.
The other one that I wanted to ask that was probably similar to this is when the humans and Michael finally visit the bad place, and they wait in this lobby museum thing that is, I think, the Hall of Mild Crappiness
yeah,
or something.
That's right.
And it's an exhibit of like four or five mildly crappy slash kind of despicable public human acts. A couple of them are legitimately just actually despicable. Mm-hmm. You have the first and the bad place. It's very genius because the bad place is honoring these people. The first person to ever floss in an office, mm-hmm. an open concept office.
Right.
The first person to take a photograph of their penis.
Right.
And there's another one that
it's like one of those giant old-timey cameras with like yeah. a flashbulb that, you know.
And the animatronic robot laughs. Goes, ha, 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 ha. Which is a very nice touch. And there's another one that the first time a waiter goes to a table and the guy's plate is clean, he says, well, you must have really hated that.
I guess
that.
You hated it, yeah. That was Josh Siegel, right? I think that was his joke, yeah.
Every one of those is so pitch perfect, but I imagine that's another scenario where, like, that's even more fun where you get to be like, who are the worst people? That must have been a ball to write.
That was fun. There's also the first white guy with dreadlocks.
Yep. First man who told a woman to smile.
To smile, yeah.
Oh, that's a very good one.
A nice touch, though, is that the first white guy with dreadlocks, and then there's the first guy to call Ultimate Frisbee Ultimate, and they're the same guy.
Very, very few jokes spoke to my soul as deeply as hating the first guy who called Ultimate Frisbee Ultimate. Like that, because like, I was in college when Ultimate Frisbee became like a big thing, and so you would just, and I went to a preppy New England college with like grass and open campuses.
Which one?
Dartmouth.
Nice.
So people are playing Ultimate and talking about mm-hmm. Ultimate. They were basically 75% of the conversations at Dartmouth were Ultimate, beer, and the Dave Matthews Band. And like, so like, I just by
you and I are the same age, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. By accident, I just grew to hate the word Ultimate.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that. I don't remember. Do you remember any others? I can't remember any others.
There must have been a lot of good.
There are a lot of good ones.
That is a little less the kind of thing that you try a million of, only because we had to build build dioramas right. or like animatronic displays for those things.
Yeah, and they're all on plaques.
They're all on plaques yeah. and stuff. So it's like you can't. That was like the opposite of just a bunch of things you write on a piece of paper and have Ted Danson say out loud. Like those required real production. So we were probably
where are those things now?
I'm getting the first man who told a woman to smile plaque from my office. Yeah, I've requested
Fantastic.
That one.
You should.
Yeah.
That was a Broad City joke that we unintentionally
yes,
stole.
Yes, Broad City. There's like a pretty well known GIF. What are we saying?
I say GIF.
I'm glad that you don't know either, because you're younger than me, and I've given up. I just like I see it, and I'm like, I don't know, whatever.
I always go GIF. Yeah, of like a guy in the street telling them to smile, and they both give him the smile with giving the finger, and yeah it's a bad male behavior.
the time. The moment where I probably laughed the loudest, I'm not sure it's the funniest, but it made me laugh the most. And I'm going to say it's a boring answer, but was a specific moment in the trolley problem sequence. And it's when Danson, Chidi turns to Danson. The trolley problem, for those who haven't watched the show, why are you listening, first of all? why haven't you watched the show? There's a trolley that's either going to run over five construction workers, or they can switch trains and it's going to run over one construction worker. And the dilemma is, what do you do? Do you kill one to save five, blah, blah. And they're all debating, is one of them a doctor? Do I know one of them? Is there any, you know, what is one of them my friend? And Derp Chidi is leading this discussion and says, oh, but Michael, we haven't heard from you. And as you said, Michael is a divine demon. And he looks at, he's got a diagram. He's looking at it. We don't see the diagram. And he looks up just matter of factly and says, you know, it's obvious that the dilemma here is, how do we kill all six humans? And that line.
Yeah.
It's just the way he – how many takes of there are Danson saying that line?
There are a lot of takes, and every one of them is amazing. And he's like, this is how I think I would do it. You would kill the five, and then you would put like a blade on the end of a long pole and hang it out the window to chop off the head of the sixth guy on the other track. And he kind of looks up, and they're all looking at him like, come on, man. And he's like, oh, I did it again, didn't I? And Chidi goes, yep, 10 more, buddy. And he gets up and writes, people are equals good on the
people. Except he's confused about that.
Yeah, what is it good? Yes, right. I'll write. Yeah, that I actually, when the show ended, the props woman, Gay Perello, who's in charge, who's amazing, came and said, like, I've got all these boxes of stuff. Like, what do you want to take as mementos from the show? And one of the things I took was his drawing from that scene.
Which I didn't even notice other than the blade the first time. It has a little bubble that says, great job, you got all six.
Yeah.
Who drew that?
I don't know. Probably Adam Rowe was one of our graphics guys. I would guess that he drew it, but I don't know. But it's a wonderful drawing. It's like, it's a trolley careening down a track, like destroying five people. They're broken in half and their blood pouring out everywhere.
Oh, it's amazing.
And then they're also holding this long pole out and very cleanly slicing off the head of the sixth guy on the other track. Yeah. Great job. You got all six. Yeah. It's a video game for him.
Jokes like that where there's a certain expectation, right? And the expectation is that he's going to give a serious answer. And it just immediately plays against that expectation in such a dramatic way that you don't see coming. Are like, there aren't many scenarios where you can make a joke like that and make it work, but those land. Like, there are a couple famous ones in sitcom history that it reminded me of that they just are just flashbulb moments for you. That one is one I will always remember.
I'm very happy.
What's fun about that too is that was when we spent the whole first season and he's in charge and he's essentially God. And then those jokes were so fun to write because that was suddenly like he was flawed and there was this new layer to that character where he was like trying to be better, but it was impossible because he's a demon, as we now know, you know? So it's just like having characters change like that just adds all this new texture as a writing
and
form, you know?
And that's the ultimate change. He went from what you thought was a purely good angel to a purely evil demon. Yeah. That's as big a change as you can actually have.
A flailing demon.
Yeah.
Who are some of the funniest NBA people?
Oh, man.
Oh, interesting.
You mean players?
Anyone.
Or people? Oh.
Who's just funny? Who appears on your TV screen? You're like, that guy's just, I'm just laughing at that guy.
Well, the three of us have talked about the fact that Inside the NBA is the funniest show on TV, right?
I think so.
Yes.
I think I believe that I laugh more regularly watching that show than any actual scripted comedy. Charles Barkley is the funniest comedian in America.
Oh, that's an NBA joke we did. I just remembered that Eleanor snuck into Charles Barkley's house and tried on all his giant shoes.
That's right.
On Christmas.
The first draft of that was that she fell asleep inside one of his shoes.
Oh, yeah.
She curled up.
Because Barkley played for the Suns. This is Dave. Yes. So how did she end up in his house? What is this?
She says she was on the road.
Yeah, and she snuck in through the doggy door. Yep. Right. Yep. And tried on all of his giant shoes while he was out. And then she says, it was one of my top 10 Christmases of all time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good NBA joke. I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
There were definitely more NFL jokes than NBA jokes. But we had, when we all worked on Parks and Rec together, we had Roy Hibbert was on the show multiple times and came and hung out with us, Detlef Schrempf. Chris Bosch was on the show playing a high school student.
I don't remember that.
It was an episode where Pawnee High was playing Eagleton High, which is their rival, and Eagleton wins every year by 100 points. And at one point, Leslie Knope just goes like, I mean, look at these kids. There's no way that kid's in high school. And it just cuts to Bosch just dunking super hard over. And then he like gets in the face of the kid.
And I'm better at French horn than you.
Better at French horn than you, Terrence, or whatever.
I guess enough time has passed that I don't remember that. I'm pretty sure I've seen every Parks and Rec episode, and I don't remember that.
Yeah, Chris Bosch dunked live on a high school kid in an episode. It was like probably season six, right?
Yeah,
like,
that was the most pathetic thing I did at Parks, I think, because that was not my episode. It was Alan Yang's episode, and I was just petulantly like not. I just kept asking Mike, can I go see Chris Bosch? Like, it's right down the street. Can I just go see the scene? And you're finally like, get out of here.
Go.
Fine.
You're like, let him go, Mike, please.
I don't know what the first comedy to realize that adults dominating children in sports is just funny. For me, it's Billy Madison when he's playing with the elementary.
You're correct.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. The dodgeball scene?
I think they're playing basketball too, aren't they?
Well, the he nails a kid in the face with a dodgeball.
Funny.
Yeah. The best.
SNL did that very funny United Way ad parody where Peyton Manning is coaching like Pee Wee football,
right,
and he's like screaming at the kids.
I haven't seen that.
It's really funny. And then he, at the end, he gets really angry and he fires a football and knocks a kid in the head. It's really funny. Like, it is always funny.
It's just
like,
always funny.
When the stakes are so high for that adult and they're taking it so seriously and just beaming a kid in the head, that's funny.
We did an episode of Parks and Rec. My son is now watching Parks and Rec, which is kind of fun for me because I'm watching it with him. And there's an episode where there's a government shutdown, but in Indiana you can't shut down youth basketball or people get really upset. So Ron Swanson and Andy Dwyer, Nick Offerman and Chris Pratt's characters, are coaching the two youth basketball teams and they play each other. And it's complicated, but basically Ron Swanson is Bobby Knight. We dress him like Bobby Knight. And he gets into a screaming match with the ref and ends up throwing a chair across the court and leading his team off the court just like Bobby Knight did. But when the team has forfeited the game and they're walking off the court, Chris Pratt, who's like 6'3", 250, runs up to this like 10-year-old kid and goes, "Yeah, eat it!" Like it's right in his face, and he had just won by forfeit. Like his team won by forfeit, and he got that intense about it. I totally forgot about it. It really made me laugh.
Your son has helped get you back in the NBA, right?
He has. Yeah, that's been my NBA renaissance. I would say the ground was primed by Joe and Jen and people that I work with because they're fanatics, and then my son, like 3-4 years ago, became an NBA obsessive, and he fell in love with Kyrie. My son is undersized for his age, and so he only identifies with point guards. Like the first one was Chris Paul because we went to see a bunch of Clippers games. Then it was Kyrie, and he has modeled his own game after Kyrie. So he brought me back into the Celtics fold, and now I'm not as intense about it as Joe and Jen because no one is. But I'm a pretty big fan again. Like I was a huge NBA fan in the 80s. I got lost in the 90s and drifted away from it. And then now I feel like I'm as big a fan as I was when I was a kid, which is pretty exciting.
That's cool.
I always am curious about this. So that's an interesting, I think a lot of people have had that evolution. As someone who has had that evolution, and you guys can chime in on this too, Jen and Joe, like what is your relationship with the boom in three pointers? Like what is that improved the quality of game watching, or do you find yourself like some people our age who are like, man, that guy just literally went up and chucked another three?
No, I love it. I mean, the gateway drug for my son and me back into the league was the Warriors. And really they like lit the fire in me because I was watching a kind of basketball I didn't know was possible. I mean, we all were. It's just that I had been away from the league for a while. But I could not believe, not just how they shot the ball, but how they passed the ball and how they set screens and how they got open. And then the just incredible acumen, the idea that like Klay Thompson can score 25 points in a quarter and he's like the third best player on their team. So that I loved it. In fact, I like made a pilgrimage up to Oakland on multiple occasions to watch I was like, I have to see this team live. Like I have to watch them score 140 points against the Phoenix Suns. So I love it. And the difference.
Another dig at Arizona.
I just realized that the first time I went, they did play the Suns. I think they scored 132 or whatever. But the point is that like in baseball, which is my real, like my true love, there is a problem in baseball right now because the old way of playing in quotes, is completely out of fashion. And now it's three true outcome sport of walk, home run, or strikeout. And I think that does make the game less interesting because you're taking a massive amount of the game out of the game. There's way less defense than there used to be. And defense is fun in baseball. In basketball, who cares? Like if you can watch, Devin Booker hit like a 35-point three-pointer, that's as exciting as basketball can get to me. To me, that's as exciting on a skill level as dunking. It's probably more exciting at some level. So I feel like scoring is good in sports in general, like football games that are defensive struggles that are 10-3 Buffalo Bills or Jaguars over Bills. Like no one wants to see that. It's not that fun because it is the result of good defense is a lot of broken plays. The result of good offense in basketball is pure joy and elation and being in a stadium where a team is on a crazy run and is drilling three-pointer after three-pointer. That's the most exciting sports gets, I think. So I'm all for it.
I have a pitch for the NBA.
Okay,
actually.
Let's do it.
Yeah, because I mostly agree with what Mike just said, but the last game the Wolves played was against the Houston Rockets, and Harden shot 22 threes on his own.
Yes.
And it was just like, it was madness. And so here's my pitch. I mentioned this on another basketball podcast, so I'm sorry I'm repeating myself, but I just want to get the word out. Is I think the rule should be every player on the roster gets 15 three-point attempts.
Ooh.
Right?
That's it.
That's, no, it's not it. But that, after 15, here's the, this is what happens. If you make it, the basket counts as 3 points, but if you miss, you lose a point.
Ooh.
Oh.
And this is some rock and jock type stuff.
All right.
It's basically just a rule for Harden.
Yes.
Do these roll over? Like Ben Simmons doesn't use his 15. Can they be dispersed?
Yeah, it's like 10,000 now.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You can store them up. Okay. No.
So Harden was 7 for 22 from three the other night. Mm-hmm. So you're saying he was probably what, like 5 of 15? And then made 1 of 2 of 7.
Right.
So he would have gained 2 points, yeah. And, or 6 points and lost 5. He would have gained 1 point.
Yeah.
Maybe that's interesting.
Tweak the math a little bit.
Well, I haven't done the, I mean.
He took 41 shots in that game.
There are people who just hate watching Harden play. I mean,
I'm one of them.
You're not a fan?
Yes. I don't find it enjoyable to watch him play. Like there was someone put a sequence on Twitter the other day that was like, it said like fire all the Rockets or something. And it was like an uninterrupted 3 minute sequence. There was Harden getting a rebound, going down, dribbling for 15 seconds, chucking up a shot and missing. Yeah. The other team came down, passed a few times, missed a shot. I think Gordon got the rebound. He dribbled down, dribbled around for a while, hucked up a shot, missed it. And it was three different, it was Harden twice and Gordon once, just not even thinking about passing, just like, standing 27 feet from the basket, waiting until there were 5 seconds left, and then hucking up a shot. I don't enjoy that.
I'd rather watch Devontae Graham in a second.
That's a deep cut, although he's playing great.
But like Harden's three, I know that percentage isn't everything. I get it. Harden's like not in the top like 120 in the league in percent, 3 point percentage. Like it's not a high percentage shot play for him to do what he's doing. He just does it so much that he ends up, you know, he leads the league in PER, which is crazy. But like I feel like anyone can do that if you took 22 3-point shots a game and are a good shooter.
He literally just plays basketball like someone playing 2K My Career. Like,
yeah.
He bought all the coins. And he's 100% on everything.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to get 50 points a game no matter what.
Yeah, he's trying to get like into the Hall of Fame credentials.
I do think there is something to like stop him then. Like, If you're an opposing team, it's like you hate watching them play. It's like, all right, make the math not work. Because until the math doesn't work, they're gonna play that.
Yeah.
And you know the thing was, Josh Okogie was hitting out. He was still, like, he would have stopped him, I think.
No, that's a good. I mean, like watching that Clippers game last week, I was like, we can't stop him. Like Kawhi's trying, everyone's trying, and like couldn't defend him, and he went nuts. And yeah, that is a good point. It's like just defend him then. Like if
totally fair. But when I worked at Saturday Night Live, I had a friend named James Egan who worked at SNL. I bought an Xbox and we played a lot of Madden. And James Egan realized there was a flaw in the game, which is no team had 5 good defensive backs that could stop passes. And so there was a play called All Streaks, which was essentially a Hail Mary. 5 wide receivers, they all run all the way down the field. You throw the ball up in the air to whoever the wide receiver is who's being guarded by your worst defensive back, and that guy would score a touchdown, and it was impossible to stop. And like, we tried everything, like, but it was just like a flaw in the game. Like, if you blitzed, he would just like throw the ball up in the air. And if it was incomplete, he would run the same play the next time and you would have to do it again. Mm-hmm. And so like, yeah, okay, fine. Stop him. But also like, don't play that way. It's annoying to play that way. Like, I know the stakes are higher for the Houston Rockets than they are for James Egan playing Madden 2004, but like, it doesn't make it enjoyable to watch. That's my point, I guess.
He's a very polarizing player. I want to talk.
What do you think about him?
I think it's enjoyable in the sense that like the game slows so dramatically when he has the ball that it gives you a very clear view into like what are the tactics the defense is using, like in real time? You don't have to pause it. You know, it's like very, like, where are they putting guys? Where, and Harden is very, if you watch him play, he's very commanding of, he tells the other players where to stand.
Yeah.
Like Capella, you stand over mm-hmm. there. Gordon, you go in that court. Like, he, and you, so you can see him thinking, okay, what rotation is he trying to trigger? How is the defense responding to that? And it's like, it's in kind of like a slow motion chess match by basketball centers that is kind of interesting to watch. But like sometimes when he takes it to an extreme, and he did the other night, it's like, I would like to see some basketball.
So what work does like switching not, what's he trying to do? Is he trying to get switches or is he trying
to, is he hunting the best matchup?
Well, that's the thing. It's like this year they're setting more screens for him than they did last year. Last year they just like dispensed with anything. They're like, we don't even need a screen.
Yeah.
Just like, you guys stand around and he'll, and like Capella, you go in the dunker spot. There's going to be one shooter over here. And like, James Harden knows exactly like what to do to get that specific shooter open and,
right.
and how the defense is going to respond. This year, they're doing a little more hunting. Like, where's the worst of, whoever. Like,
where's right. Lou Williams?
Yeah. I don't want to be rude.
Yeah. I'll be rude.
Or Jarrett Culver. Like, watching that game the other night was just like, it felt like bullying or something. It was just like, that he's 19 or whatever. It's like not fair. It was like watching someone's nightmare in real life. Just like, I have to guard Harden again. Like, it was mean.
Wait, how do you feel about the Russ Harden experiment? How do you think it's going?
I think when both of them are on the floor, it's just going okay. And that's what's kind of interesting is that like when Harden is by himself, they're destroying people. And when Russ is by himself, they're getting destroyed. And when they're both on the floor, they're just kind of like, they're like an okay to decent team, like plus 3 per 100 possessions. And that's probably not going to be good enough for them to win the West. Like they need them to have more synergy. But like so far, it's working pretty well. Like it's not, it's strange. Like, I do think, As teams get more into the season, and particularly in the playoffs, defenses are going to get more dramatic of just, they're not going to guard Russ at all. Like, they're just going to have Russ's guys sit in James's lap, and like, Houston is going to have to digest. Like, teams, I think, are tiptoeing in that direction, but it's more cautious than I thought. I thought they would just open the season being like, Russell Westbrook, your jump shot is broken. We're just not going to pay any attention to you. But
that's
it's
so sad.
It is. I mean, that game, again, I haven't watched a ton of Rockets games, but the Clippers game the other night, like, Russ shot us back into the game. Like, Harden was cooking, it was crazy, and then when Russ came back in, because he got, like, 3 fouls early in the game, when he finally came back, he was just chucking up shots and, like, didn't hit any. And I was like, oh, this is how we get back in the game. It's Russ Westbrook. He's helping us.
People, do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big and so unwieldy they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek proves that there's a better way. Search for sports, live music, comedy, theater, whatever. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web. You only have to go to one place, not 5, 10, 15 secondary market sites. Then it rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. And finally, SeatGeek displays them on an interactive seat map. Green dots for good deals, red dots for maybe less good deals. Very, very easy to use. And every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. I've used their app many times before, including to get Hamilton tickets. SeatGeek will give you $10 off your first purchase. Wow. All you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today. Use promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast, The Low Post, for $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code LOW, bam, $10 off your first purchase.
I want to do a little more good place, and I'm going to get you out of here. Arizona has already come up. I think one of your greatest accomplishments is a television show. And I didn't realize this was a thing until yesterday. I was Googling around on the plane. The Arizona Republic, the staid newspaper of the state, when this season premiered, wrote an article that was like, FYI, The Good Place is a television show on NBC. It's coming back. The main character is from Arizona. Here are some things that character has said about Arizona. And it was like a very old school newspaper-y thing. It was like completely dispassionate. Like there was no like, you guys should be readers. You should be upset about this. There was no like, this is kind of quippy and funny. It was just like a news service for Arizona readers. Like FYI, Eleanor Shellstrop once said that our chief export is race shift sheriffs and HPV. Like, just FYI. Like, you got a serious newspaper to just write this story. That's amazing.
That rules. I did not know this.
I'll send it to you.
I didn't know that either. There are some good ones. Well, there was a good one this week where she said that they were talking about their funerals on Earth, and she said that, in Arizona, you can either have a regular funeral or they can put your body on a gun range and you get a $200 state tax credit.
I don't even know what so Florida is obvious. Jacksonville takes it to a genius level. Arizona is not obvious. And yet you've made great sport of it. So how does Arizona get picked?
I think originally it was, I'm obsessed with Florida. I've always been obsessed with Florida. I think a lot of people are, comedians at least. And then I was like, that doesn't make sense. Like, though Jason could be from Florida, but where should she be from? And I remember thinking, like, well, what's the Florida of the West?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's Arizona. In terms of the number of stories that have been in the news about just like crazy things that have happened, Arizona, by far, more than any place else, more than California, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, like, that was another thing. Breaking Bad had just ended, and it was it can't be New Mexico. Like, New Mexico's on, yeah. So I think that was it. I don't think I put a ton of thought into it other than that.
No, and then one of the writers is from the Phoenix area, right?
So yes, but he wasn't on the show. Core Jefferson, he wasn't on the show.
Once he joined, then it became sort of like this weird way of making fun of him. Yeah, the show.
That's right.
He just like kept like just
also
going
like
in.
Gronk. Went to Arizona, mm-hmm. right? It was like anyone that you could think of that was famous, Joe Arpaio, like those, anyone that you could, that was an Arizona native in the culture was like, yeah, that's where we want to live.
That's who she'd hang with. Yeah.
Gronk. When you make the Arpaio joke, racist sheriffs are our chief export.
Yeah.
Political ideology pretty much laid bare. Not that it's a secret or even a secret on the show. But that's a cutting one. That's like, you know, there are people you're going to for sure alienate with a joke like that. Do you ever get any pushback from NBC?
No, nothing. We really don't. I mean, we really don't. And also, like, you know, I started at SNL and Lorne Michaels' whole thing was like, if it's a fair hit, you can do it. Like, it's straight up. And it doesn't matter what ideology you're representing, if the hit is fair, then it's fair. Then if you can defend it, if the person called you on the phone and said, why did you do that joke? And you can defend the joke, then go ahead. And so, like, you know, Joe Arpaio is a racist sheriff. That's what he literally was. He was famous for being racist. He got into trouble for being racist. His whole thing was like, everyone should be more. You should be more like me. You should be more racist. That's what his argument was. He was put in jail essentially for being racist, and then the president pardoned him for being racist. So it's not like there's nothing controversial about saying that. I mean, it's a little bit unfair to say that Arizona's main export is racist sheriffs, but. You know,
she's making a quip.
Yeah, exactly. She's playing fast and loose with the details. Yeah.
The show is, Kristen is amazing. Ted is amazing. The show does not work as well if these supporting actors who are, I think, were unknown to little known before this show are not all amazing. Mm-hmm. Darcy is going to blow up. William Jackson Harper is going to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
Manny's already been in big movies. Like, it's going to happen for all those people. So Chidi is Eleanor's love interest, is this crucial character in the show. William is amazing at reading dialogue and kind of stuttering and making facial expressions. Like, I assume he had to audition.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When he auditions, do you know, right? Like, is there a moment where like, oh, this guy might be the guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We knew. I mean, I was like, we were kind of like, we were hoping to find someone who could do Adam Scott-like things, which is, you know, be a funny straight man.
Yeah.
And then his chemistry test with Kristen, we were like, well, we found it. Like,
he auditioned in New York, and we had seen a bunch of really good people. But it was like, And then Allison Jones, who was our casting director, sent me his tape and was like, take a look at this. And it was like a really grainy, crappy quality tape of him in New York. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, wait a second. And I sent it to Drew Goddard, and he watched it. I think he was at a basketball game. I think he was at a Lakers game.
Right, that sounds right.
And he watched it at a Lakers game, I think, and was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then everyone, like, I show it to Jen and Joe and, you know, Josh Siegel and Dylan Morgan, who are writers, and Megan Amram, like, everyone who saw it had the same reaction, which was like, yeah, 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 I think this is right. And it's, you always have to pay attention to that. Like, it's, like, any one writer or producer can get something very wrong. It's rare that, like, 12 of them will right. get it wrong. So when you get that kind of, like, yeah, this is the guy kind of consensus, it almost always means it's the guy.
Will's a theater guy, and the thing that, like, 4 years of being on set with him that I was so continually impressed by is, like, actors have different styles. Some actors come to set and they're like, I gotta run through it a few times to learn it. Like, they won't have learned it yet. He is so incredibly precise with the dialogue. He comes to set, he knows it perfectly. He's thought out, like, he's just so prepared. And I do think that comes from a theater background. And yeah, he's amazing. I cannot speak highly enough of him.
I am not the most in touch with pop culture. So maybe this is dumb, but I had never seen him before. In anything before the show.
You wouldn't have.
Subsequent to your show airing, I was at my in-law's house and there's three small children in the house.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know what's coming.
Yeah.
And we had Sesame Street on. And all of a sudden, there's William Jackson Harper playing a cowboy in Sesame Street. And I want to say Lin-Manuel Miranda may also have been involved. And I was like, oh my God, there he is. Like, that's wow.
I thought it was Electric Company. Isn't it Electric?
Maybe Electric. Yeah, it might have been Electric Company. Yeah, it was some child's programming that I was watching intently, obviously, because why not?
Which one of the weirdest quirks of history is that William Jackson Harper and Lin-Manuel Miranda did an Electric Company sketch together like 5 years ago.
It was one of those things where I was very tired and groggy in the morning. You know, the kids are fighting, they're not sleeping, everyone's tired. I'm like, I mean, is this actually happening? Like, they're in the Old West having a shootout, and it's Lin-Manuel Miranda. Yeah. The last thing I want to ask you about is the art of, you guys have a bunch of fun supporting characters, like almost mini characters. Bad Janet,
mm-hmm.
Derek.
Sure.
I almost view On Earth prior to dying Eleanor as one of those characters where they're just punchy. They punch you. They're so funny. And a lot of your other shows have had this too, where it's like, even on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the Cadillac Bandit is Craig Robinson.
The Pontiac Bandit
is kind of like, I wonder the art of how much is the woman in the middle place whose name I'm forgetting.
Oh, Mindy Sinclair.
Yeah. How the art of how much is too much of a character like that is very interesting to me, because they're all – Their hit rate is 100% and everybody loves them. And I bet you get asked, like, boy, I would love to see more Bad Janet. The restraint it takes to just dole it out in the correct dosage must be hard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Like, take Derek as an insane character played by Jason Mantzoukas, the world's funniest living human
who
being.
Who plays a similar role in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's like he comes in and just explodes.
I said this to him recently. I said, every show I've ever worked on, the writers have designed a character, and I thought, well, this is a really funny idea, but who the hell is going to play that? Oh, it's Mantzoukas. when you have that thought, the answer is always Mantzoukas. It's like, what insane maniac could do this? Yeah, it's Jason. But he's very weird. He's a very, very weird character, and he's a little hard to explain. Janet invented him as a boyfriend for herself, and the idea was that, like, she's never invented a being before, and so he's kind of wrong. Like, his brain doesn't really work. He doesn't talk right. In the first episode he was in, do you remember the languages? We translated, we wrote his dialogue, then we used Google Translate, and we translated it, like, into Turkish, and then from Turkish to, like, Croatian, and then Croatian to Japanese, and then Japanese back to English, and then that's what he said.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was really funny. You have to be very, very careful with a character like that, because in the 1970s, in the sitcom world, in the 80s, if a character like hit, then the network suits would come by and go like, more of that character. And they didn't care. Like, this story was meaningless. The long-term health of the show is meaningless.
SNL has done that with some characters too.
Yes. SNL does that a lot.
That bit's a hit every week.
Do it again. Do it more. Do it more. Do it more. And like, it's just, it's killing the golden goose in that world. In the sitcom world, it's more like you're just running the risk of falling too in love with this crazy thing. And that, like, Jason Mantzoukas is and Derek are very powerful flavors. It's like hot sauce. If you put too much hot sauce on something, then all you taste is hot sauce. So, like, It requires a lot of restraint, and I think we're pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we could have definitely gone to some of those wells more than we did.
I think kind of the North Star, and this is something I think Joe and I both learned from Mike over the years from Parks and Good Place, is it also helps when you're thinking of them specifically in relation to your main characters. It's Bad Janet is a foil to Janet, and Derek happened because Janet was dealing with these feelings about Jason, and Mindy was this kind of warning sign to Eleanor of what her life would be. So all these characters who are so fun and funny first most come from a place of how do they serve the main characters? And I think if you tether it to that, it doesn't just feel like a flight of fancy. It's okay, they have a reason for existing first, and then they can be funny, but let's always track it to the main characters.
Right, and then you can ask the question of if you're going to use one of them, of do we have to?
Yeah.
Is it because of the story, or do you just want to see Manzoukas again?
Exactly. And sometimes you do just want to see Manzoukas.
Yes, mostly.
And on the flip side, that we've had so many instances in the writer's room where we've created this crazy new character to help with the story, and then had trouble figuring it out or who to cast. And then suddenly we would remember oh, wait, no, that could just be Michael.
Yeah.
We don't have to create a new character to
say these lines.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I have to go and you all have to go, but this has been delightful. There's so much stuff I haven't even been able to get to. The way you've created a universe, things like the accounting department are just delightful. Just it's awesome. Congratulations. And if people are not watching The Good Place, this is season 4. Right?
Yeah.
So what do we got? 60, 70 episodes?
Less than that. It's 54 total when we're done.
Binge it. Get caught up, because now we have a little time before the last 5 or whatever it is you said. It's an absolutely awesome show. It's a sneaky joke factory. You don't think of it as a 30 Rock style machine gun of jokes, but it kind of is. And it's hilarious.
We also barely touched on Wiggins' resurgence. We have a lot to cover here.
I know. We do. We'll have to do it again. But I just want to congratulate you all. It's been awesome to watch the show pick up steam.
I thought you were talking about Andrew Wiggins.
Joe, Mandy, go Wolves. I hope. Yeah. I really – now I'm a little worried for you. I hope it keeps up.
No, man. I came into this season – This is huge for me, with low expectations. I promised my wife I wouldn't get mad watching games, because it isn't about this year. It's about the next couple of years. So.
And go to Joe's website, because he's not on Twitter anymore, and you'll see stand updates and things like that.
Yeah.
He's hilarious. Jen, go Clippers.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoy the games this week. Thank you so much for coming on. And Mike, thank you so much for your time, and congrats on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right, everybody, that's it. Now we'll talk basketball next time. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.